are all kinds of stories we hear about people sell chametz on Pesach. The guy comes in and wants to eat it, wants to drink it, and you know, all kinds of stories, but the rabbi takes him in and is very happy that he's taking the sale seriously and he's eating the chametz and often he helps him out. The truth is, in Europe, this was a big problem. They weren't just selling, again, leftover boxes of Cheerios and a half-finished bottle of alcohol from a Simcha 3 years ago. They were selling warehouses full of alcohol. They could not usually afford to have the non-Jew come in and just drink. Now, in the way we do it today, where the guy is going to have to pay for whatever he takes, that's not as much of a problem. Because if the guy can afford it, it's not as much of a problem because you'll bill him. Even today, it's practically a problem because if the guy... You know, if the guy drinks, if he drinks $10-$20, fine. If he brings his friends in, if they drink, a few $1,000s, you may have trouble getting the money. But today, you know, realistically, I don't think it's a problem that often. But back in Europe, it was often a real question. I want to discuss tonight, that we were learning this week, the question, is it legitimate to deny the guy access to the chametz that you sold? Does that cause any problems for the validity of the sale? I was looking around. I don't know where all these stories. I'm not sure where they're documented about the guy entering and drinking the chametz. One story I did find from a few years ago. This is just, I guess, just shows how kind of crazy and convoluted the whole business of mechiras chametz becomes. There was a rabbi somewhere in Israel who was unhappy with the sale of chametz. He thought it was too much of a harama. He didn't really like it. So he decided he and his kahila would actually give chametz to the guy as a matana. So they set up a room adjacent to the shul, I think, and he told everyone, put chametz here, we're going to give the chametz, there's matana, no strings attached to the guy. So the guy came in and carted off all the chametz and said he was keeping it. And everyone was a little surprised by this. They didn't expect this to actually happen. Mm-hmm. So I think what happened was the Rav actually went back to the guy. He didn't straight out demand it back. He just said, we were a little surprised. We didn't expect you to actually take all the chametz. And the guy said, okay, he gave it back. Yeah, so again, I'm not going to pass in that particular case with Chilin, but this just kind of goes to underscore how fraught and tricky the whole process of Mechiras Chametz is, trying to walk this balance between making it halakhically valid and not too much of a harama, but at the same time trying to not actually incur significant losses by doing this. So tonight we'll discuss this question. We'll learn this week the question of denying the guy access to the Chametz. So beginning from the earlier Achronim already, the Bach, the Taz, the Magen Avraham, and down from there, the Achronim are generally against this. The Achronim do not like the idea of denying the guy access to the chametz. Now, there are really three or four different levels that we're talking about. The first level is, at the time of the sale, you tell the guy, I'm selling it to you, but I'm keeping it locked, and you're not getting in there all Pesach. That's the kind of the worst case. Another case the Achronim discuss is that you don't do that or say that at the time of the sale, but afterwards, an hour after you sell it, you stick your padlock on and you lock it up. Third case, a little more minor even, is where you don't actually put any special lock or deliberately do anything to keep him out. You just, the normal locks, you don't refuse to give him the keys. You just don't offer it to him. You don't bother providing it to him. If he comes to you, you'll worry about what to do then. But in the meantime, you don't make it easy for him to get to the chametz necessarily, but you're not actually going out of your way to lock it, and you're not refusing him the keys. So we'll see, the post can distinguish between all these cases. So the Bach and the Taz are the big machmir. The Bach and the Taz are very machmir. They say, you can't do this, you can't lock the guy out. If you do, then it's a harama, it vitiates the whole mechira, and you're over by your own, by yamata, you're over in Issa Daraisa, the Taz says, v'chametz is asur b'hana, and you have a big problem. Now, there are chalkim on the Taz, there are chalkim, notably the Nod B'Yehuda. The Mishnah Berurah brings the Nod B'Yehuda, the Acharon brings the Nod B'Yehuda. He says, he doesn't understand, a sale is a sale. You're putting locks and things, so we say you're a Goslem, so you did something you shouldn't do, you have no right to do it maybe, but why does that affect the sale? The sale on paper is a binding, if they would go wherever they would go to enforce the sale. So the sale is binding, you put a lock on, so take the lock off. He'll get a bolt cutter, he'll come in and he'll cut your locks off, he'll get a locksmith, he'll get rid of the lock. But just because you put locks on, how does that affect the sale? The sale is a valid sale. So obviously, what the other Achronim understood, when the Mishnah Berurah explains in the Shaar Tzion, what the other Achronim understood was that Mechiras Chametz, as we discussed last week, the whole kind of the original problem, the original sin of Mechiras Chametz is that the whole thing the Achronim basically acknowledges is a harama. We mentioned the Tvua Shaar everyone brings, that it is a harama, but it's mutter b'drabanan. Some of the other Achronim seem to try to want to avoid making it into harama, but the goal of Mechiras Chametz, even according to the Tvua Shaar, is to pile up enough arguments and enough circumstances to make it as much not like a harama as you can. So what's bothering the Taz and the Bach is that a mechira, which fundamentally is missing the basic condition of sale, that you can have it, and you can enjoy it, you can eat it, that's not a sale. Nobody takes that seriously. Now again, other the Yud is asking, you know, he would argue apparently that anyway, nobody takes it seriously. It's anyway just a formality. So why does this make it more of a formality? The other Akharim saying, no, it has to be at least technically, at least on paper, at least in some world, it has to be some kind of valid Mechira. A Mechira where he will have no access is not a Mechira, and therefore it becomes an unacceptable Harama, and therefore they hold, you can't do that. It's Asr L'Chatchila, it's Asr B'Dieved, you're over Bal Yera. Chametz is Asr B'Hana, if you do that, and you had better not do that. And that pretty much is the consensus of the poskim, that certainly to deny him access from the get-go, to tell him you're selling it to him, but you won't be able to use it, that completely nullifies the whole notion of mechira.
Telling him this doesn't help, though? If the guy knows that you're telling him this?
The guy knows which way?
He knows that he has no access. Isn't his knowing that he has no access better than his not knowing that he has no access?
So the Achronim actually bring a svara the other way. The Prima Gadim brings a svara that if he doesn't know, it's not as bad, because in his head, it's still a mechira, he doesn't realize he's being denied access. If he knows he's being denied access, most Akharim seem to think it's worse, because he knows it's a charade at that point, and he doesn't take it seriously.
The Noda Behuda would say, even in that case, it's still valid if you tell him L'Chatchila?
Even if you tell him?
Or he would only say that if you do it right afterwards?
So,
because his Svara was, the sale is binding, but if the Goy L'Chatchila knows it's a joke, so why would it be binding? I don't know if his argument in sound is strong in that case.
So is it clear whether Noda Behuda is talking about a case where he knew at the time he was being denied access or not? In other words, basically, you know, we'll come back to that in just 1 second. So the Chak Yaakov, all the Achronim bring the Chak Yaakov. The Chak Yaakov says that the Taz and the Bach, the primary problem of B'dieved is when it was there already locked B'shas Ma'aseh, then the whole thing is batel. But if it was there, if B'shas HaMecher, it was unlocked, the guy had access, just you then decided for extra security to lock it afterwards, you're still not right, he says. You still shouldn't do it. Digar and Bo, Zay Nachon, you really shouldn't do that. But B'dieved, it doesn't ask for the Chametz. Shartzian brings that, the Chayadim quotes the Chak Yaakov saying, it's Mutter L'Chatchila to do it afterwards. He doesn't actually say that, he points out. He actually says it's Osir to do it afterwards. It's just Osir because of a Gzeira. It's the wrong thing to do, apparently, but it's not Mikra Din. It doesn't invalidate the sale. So now, what Reis Osman is suggesting is that maybe there's no real machlokas between the Noda Behuda, that just that the Chak Yaakov understood that the Taz is asering, the Taz is talking about what you did at B'shas Maisa, and that's why he's asering B'dieved. The Behuda, well, that it's mutter, is because he understood that what Behuda says, Lahedia, that he's rejecting the Taz, maybe he understood the Taz was talking about even in a case where you put it on afterwards, and that's what he's saying, at least in that case where it wasn't there B'shas Mecher, maybe in that case he doesn't feel that it should invalidate the Mekach. The language of the Noda Behuda is Guf Divrei Ataz Shekasav Shehechesh Lamaser Mafteach Hu Harama V'Avar Ba'Yira. If you didn't give over the Mafteach, it's a Harama. Mabekach, he says, even if you are Mechavin for a Harama, he says, you don't give over the key. It sounds like it was already locked and you weren't giving over the key. Maybe you didn't tell him you weren't going to give over the key till afterward. I'm not sure. Yesh logic. But the passion.
His svara sounds a little much weaker, though, if the guy actually knew.
Right, because he keeps saying, sorry, the lashon he uses is, he says, if the lev hamacher was for harama, you intended as a harama, then you go to Beis Din. Beis Din doesn't care what you thought. He says, well, tell him that the mecher is valid. You're saying, but.
So why is it weaker? He knows the harama. He knows the harama.
No, so it means the guy didn't take it seriously.
Which is goof what the Shartian says, right? People are answering for the people are countering.
Sale. I can go through the motion, but it's not valid. I mean,
which is goof what the Shartian says is the answer.
That's really hard. Why can't he play along with the Harama?
Okay, but then it's only Harama. It's only Harama.
He does both of them for the sale. So why is my das okay? Even though I know it's Harama, why isn't his das also okay?
Because if on paper it's a valid sale, and the guy thinks it's a real sale,
but I know Sarum, so why is my...
But you're knowing Aroma doesn't count in Beis Din. If the guy himself is not offering to buy it because he's saying it's just a joke, then I never sold it.
But if I'm not really offering to sell it, if you think Aroma makes it that I'm not really
offering
to sell
it.
So is his.
All right, we
also signed a contract.
There obviously are two sides to this. We can debate this further. I'll call upon him where we have the Nod Yehuda who doesn't like the Taz. We have the Chak Yaakov who agrees that the Taz is right, but it, he says it depends on whether the this was already being done at the time of the sale. If it is, then everything's batel. You're over by your own. If not, not. And this is the consensus of other poskim too, the Makar Chaim and others, that it depends on. Shabur brings this distinction down, that it depends on whether you were doing this already at the time of the sale, or if you were doing it afterward. Now, we should mention that there are other reasons offered by the Achronim, other problems offered by the Achronim with not giving over the key. The first of all, some Achronim say, l'chatchila, one reason to give over the key is because that itself could be a form of kenyan. Even though it's not one of the kenyanim that we talked about last week, it's not one of the kenyanim mentioned by Chazal, there are those who learn there is a kenyan of situmta, of doing things according to the minhag, that if whatever the commercial culture recognizes as a kenyan, people often give the example of mazel bracha in the diamond industry or whatever it is, if you do whatever the society considers a Kenyan, it can be a Kenyan. So, posts can talk about the idea that giving over the key can be a Kenyan. Again, that's not such a big deal. We don't rely on that Kenyan. We do a lot of other Kenyanim anyway. We do handshakes, and we do Kesef, and we do Shnar, and we do Chalipin, and we do Agav, so maybe Odisa. So again, you know, you don't do this Kenyan, it's certainly not the end of the world. There is another Svar, though, that the Mishnah Berurah talks about, the Chartian talks about, there's a Shuv in the Shalom Eshev, the Stechemen talk about. There is another issue, which is that even if the failure to give over the key doesn't in itself make it into a harama. But the problem is that when it comes to chametz, in addition to not being allowed to own the chametz, if you have certain types of achrayas, if you have certain types of liability and responsibility for chametz, even though you don't have the title to it, it's not your chametz, you still have a problem. Now, the definition of achrayas is a subject of considerable dispute. What type of achrayas is sufficient? So there is a problem that the Achronim raise, going back to the Shulchan Aruch Harav, other Achronim, there is a problem that the Shalom Eshev points that you really have this problem in every Mechira. Even in a real Mechira, and you do give over the key, if the chametz burns down the next day, the guy is not paying you all the money that you expect to get for this. If you have the chametz in your house, he never took delivery, as far as he knows in his head, if you don't provide him that chametz, you're not getting paid. That's the reality of it. And especially today, where you sold chametz that's a lot more than he's worth anyway, if the chametz burns down, he's not good for the money. So you need that chametz to remain intact. So either he can then flip it and get money for it, or you can be gove it as payment. Practically speaking, if that chametz burns down, you are going to suffer a tremendous loss. So the question is that called achrayas? The fact that you need that chametz to remain in existence, because otherwise you're going to take a big loss, you're going to be responsible in a practical way, if not necessarily in a halachic way, is that called achrayas? So some achronim say that if you don't give over the key, then the guy is certainly going to say, I never took delivery, I never had access, I never had physical access to the chametz at all, so you're certainly not getting paid if it burns down. Again, the Shalom Eshev says if you're really worried about that, then even if you did give him the key, he's not going to pay you if it burns down. But putting that point aside, there are achronim who say that if you haven't given him access, if you haven't given him the key, then even if the sale is technically valid, then it's really still considered that you own the chametz, not that you own the chametz, but you have achrayas for the chametz, and therefore there's still a problem of bal yira, there's still a problem of chametz shavar al pesach, and therefore that's another reason why you have to provide access to the key. Now, there's another reason, another point that comes up. This comes up in a slightly related context. The question about, there's a marsham. Marsham talks about what happens if you, he's talking about Mechiras Bechar, he talks about Mechiras Chametz also, what happens if you sell the animal to the guy to avoid the problem of Bechar, you sell the Chametz, and when the guy actually comes and it's time to deliver it, you don't provide it. You say, I'm not giving it to you. You sell it to somebody else, you eat it, you just refuse to give it to him. So does that cause any problems or not? That was after Pesach. So whatever happens from now on is not a problem. The payment was already born, so we don't care what happens from now on. The question is, does that somehow retroactively cause a problem for the sale? So again, there are two ways to look at that. You can say the fact that you're not giving it to him now, that somehow shows the whole thing was a harama. Well, again, the Chak Yaakov says you don't do that. That if the Shas Mekach, everything was done correctly, the fact that later you started to make trouble, that you shouldn't do it, but that doesn't retroactively invalidate the sale. But the Marsham actually raises a halacha which is actually an extensive sugya in Chashon Mishpat. Marsham raises a very interesting problem. Marsham brings a nesivus. The nesivus says, let's say I sell you something, and let's say I sell you a car, and I sell the car to you on credit, you owe me $10,000 for the car. And the next day, I go ahead and I steal the car and I destroy it. So he says, you still owe me the $10,000. The sale still goes through. Now I'm a mazik, just like if I destroyed your own car that I never had any connection to. I owe you for destroying the car. So you owe me the price of the car, and I owe you for the damage to the car. Now, they normally cancel each other out, but the nafkamina would be, let's say the price went up or down in between. You don't just say the fact that I destroyed the car means the sale gets unraveled retroactively. You say, no, the sale was a sale. You still owe me the payment, and I owe you as a mazik. However, the nesiva says, that's true if I actually delivered the car that I owed you, that I sold to you, and then I destroy it. If I fail to deliver it, let's say the other case, where you... Well, let's say you made a kinyan sudor for the car, and now you owe me $10,000, and I have to give you the car. And then I don't give you the car. I simply go ahead and I destroy it. I throw it away. I sell it to somebody else, and you can't get it back. Then the nesiva says it's not just that you don't say the sale is valid, and I owe you for destroying your car, and you owe me for the price of the car. If I fail to deliver the item that was the deal, then the sale retroactively unravels. That every sale has a kind of implicit tnai. The sale only works if both parties live up to their commitments under the sale. If either party defaults, so to speak, then retroactively the whole sale is void. This comes up, for example, in discussions of schiras batim, with evictions. If the tenant doesn't pay the rent, so how does halacha look at that? Do you have the right to terminate the contract? So the answer is yes. Many poskim say yes. And the pshat is, any contract, even if it doesn't explicitly have a paragraph discussing default and conditions, has an implicit condition that the contract is only valid insofar as both parties live up to their obligations, and if they don't, then it's void, and even retroactively void. Even with regard to a sale, if either party fails to provide his stipulated duty, then the whole thing unravels. So the Marsham says, if when you sell chametz, or when you sell a bechor, if you then fail to deliver, then retroactively the whole thing is void, and even if it wasn't Aharon. But you fail to live up to your obligation, the whole thing is void, and the whole thing is retroactively bottled. Marsham wasn't talking about this shaila of putting locks on Pesach. He was talking about a case where after Pesach, the guy comes to you for the chametz, and you say no, or you just sell it to somebody else, and you thumb your nose at him. That Marsham is saying that people are going to be makel. I think he's a guy. It's gazalakim. They can do what they want. The Marsham says you have a much besides gazalakim. You have a whole different problem. The problem is that retroactively you're tossing out the whole sale. That could be another reason why, even on Pesach, if you deny the guy the chametz that he has the right, if it actually comes down l'maisa to denying him the access to the chametz, not just you fail to give him the key, but you actually refuse to let him in, you're dealing with this problem. That if you fail to deliver, so again, the guy might have the right to either exercise his option of voiding it or not, and he might decide to let the sale stand anyway. But if he doesn't, if he says, okay, you're not giving me the chametz, then I'm out of here, then you might have a real problem. That's going to tie into another thing that we'll see a little bit about this week, the question of after Pesach, whether you should buy it back with a proper kinyan or not, or just say forget about it. As we'll see, some poskim say you actually should buy it back. And one of the reasons is, again, because if you don't, then if you just walk away, at least if the guy is not satisfied, then possibly you're dealing with a problem that the whole mekach is becoming retroactively void. And the mafreya, there's a problem of chamash shavur alav ha-Pesach.